Welcome to Chambers Expert Focus Podcast. The legal market continues to evolve and grow, and in-house counsel and the legal community are looking to learn more about the stories and trends that are driving the global legal profession forward. Chambers Expert Focus identifies the latest legal trends, brings forth market-leading insights, and highlights the critical detail behind them. Each featured expert helps corporations and legal professionals keep up with the pace of change and build confidence in the face of uncertainty. For more information on Chambers Expert Focus, please visit chambers.com/expert-focus.
Hello, and welcome to another Chambers Expert Focus podcast. I'm joined today by Stephen Molo, a founding partner at Molo Lampkin and one of America's leading courtroom advocates, and by Sarah Margolis, a partner at the firm who specializes in litigating business as well as IP disputes. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Our discussion today will focus on dispute resolution in America, specifically commercial disputes that go all the way to trial and the specialized strategies this involves. The overwhelming number of civil lawsuits in America, including high-stakes business disputes, settle, which is understandable given the risks and expense involved. What is it that causes a party, plaintiff or defendant, to say, we understand all that, but we're going to trial?
Usually a case goes to trial because the parties have fundamentally different views on the value of the case. A variety of factors influence those views. Certainly, the evidence developed in the fact and expert discovery stage of the case are important, but also important are the party's financial circumstances, its views of what type of trial they would get and what type of, the possible outcomes, the decisions it would get from a judge or if it's a jury trial, what the jury research has shown.
And sometimes also, a party will have really a lot of confidence in its position on a key legal issue that it lost at an earlier stage of the case. It might be something that was decided at the summary judgment stage or the motion to dismiss stage, or it could be about how the judge has said she will instruct the jury through jury instructions, which come at the end of the trial. So the party might believe that the risk of a trial loss is substantially mitigated by the likelihood of a victory on appeal at the next stage, or at least a favorable settlement after trial in light of that appellate issue. It can be a really big bet, but some clients are willing to make it.
And is there a type of case in terms of the underlying dispute that's more likely to go to trial?
Not really. It can be an antitrust case. It could be a fraud case, a contract dispute, a shareholder dispute, a bondholder dispute, an IP dispute. You don't see many class actions tried these days, but recently we won a nice jury verdict for the plaintiff class in a securities fraud case.
And I know sometimes you were brought in very late in a case, maybe after it's been litigated for years, to represent a client at trial. How does that come about?
Well, it's interesting because fewer cases do get tried. It means there are fewer lawyers who try cases, and sometimes a client will recognize that the case may have been plodding along for 3 years, 4 years, maybe even longer with discovery, motion practice, and all of a sudden they realize it's going to be tried. They may have a trial setting in 3 months or 6 months or even shorter time frame than that. And they can sometimes look at their lead lawyer who may have done a very fine job up to that point and realize this is someone who really does not have much, if any, experience trying complex cases before a jury or a judge. And that can be an eye-opening moment for a client. And some clients sometimes find us, and they find us all sorts of ways. They find us through the internet. They find us through word of mouth with other clients. They read about cases that we have that have been in the legal or business media. And they say to us, hey, can you come in and work with this other law firm that's been handling the case for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it is? Sometimes a firm itself will approach us and they say, we've gotten the case up to this point in time, up to this point, and we think this is a winner, but frankly, we don't have the firepower and the experience that you have. If you guys come work with us on this case, it can make a real difference and we can get this over the finish line. And every once in a while, a client will actually want to replace its law firm over a disagreement concerning trial strategy or whether the case should be settled. So, I mean, there's a whole variety of ways that this comes about, but ultimately a client has to feel comfortable and believe that it's got an experienced fighter leading the charge and then a competent, well-structured team that can take the case from where it is to a win. It really becomes a very intimate relationship at that point in time where the client just has to have that confidence.
It's interesting that you get approached both by clients and by their firms. You say a competent, well-structured team. What does that mean?
Sarah, why don't you explain that?
Sure. Well, you can have a great lead trial lawyer, the best lead trial lawyer, but in a complex high-stakes case that's going to trial, there is just far too much for one person to be effective without other strong players focusing on discrete issues. You really need a team. For example, we might have a lawyer focused on damages, another focused on liability experts, another focused on legal issues and the jury instructions also. Those lawyers need to go deep in their assigned areas, but they also have to understand the broad strategy and be aware of all of the other aspects of what's going on in the case.
And the team should be diverse.
Right. Diversity is so important. It broadens your perspective and provides strength. Not everybody looks at the world or the issues in the case in the same way. A team with diverse voices will be able to communicate in ways that resonate with a broader swath of decision makers, whether that's the judge or the jury. Diversity isn't just a catchphrase. It really does lead to better outcomes, and that's backed up by data.
Interesting. And what you're describing there sounds highly structured, an almost military approach. Can you provide a sense of what that actually looks like at a trial?
Well, we believe a case should be tried before we ever set foot in the courtroom. And by that, I mean, we've mapped out our testimony of our witnesses and the cross-examination of opposing witnesses. And that includes the exhibits that we'll use with each of them. We've thought through the evidentiary issues and how they may arise during the course of the trial. And we do this collaboratively to capture the best thinking of everyone on the team, the most senior and the most junior people.
We have our own system for organizing trials. The same system carries over from trial to trial to trial, so expectations for every single team member from the most junior to the most senior are very clear. We're not reinventing the wheel with each case. We use whiteboarding as a tool during our discussions to spark creativity, but also bring discussions to a concrete point with action items for the next day.
You know, we actually have dinner every night as a team at 7 p.m. during the trial. It's a very regimented day, and there's an agenda at the dinner where we cover what needs to be done based upon our plan and what's happened in the day's developments. And again, the whole notion of collaboration, communication is key because, as Sarah pointed out, no one person can do everything. And the kinds of complex trials that we're talking about, you really want to utilize your resources to the fullest extent possible, get the most out of people to get the best result for the client.
Wow. And dinner every day at the same time in the same place sounds, if I may say so, rather rigid. Aren't trials supposed to be dynamic?
Well, they are dynamic, but having an experience-based system and a plan, and as Sarah says, we use the same system from trial to trial, and having a plan, we can better address courtroom twists and turns as they arise. I would say that structure enables creativity. If you have a clear view of where you're going, who's doing what, it frees you to be able to think the great thoughts that sometimes arise and creative thoughts that sometimes arise to allow you to win a case.
Interesting. And Sarah, I think you mentioned jury research a little earlier. What exactly do you mean by that?
Sure. So there are consultants who, under confidentiality protections of both the attorney-client privilege and the work product doctrine, run various jury exercises, which actually they're surveys, they're focus groups, they're mock trials where we convene a mock jury and present the themes of our case. And that helps you further refine your themes and assess likely juror reactions. Once you can't really know how people are going to react to even what you think are the most compelling ways to tell your story until you actually tell it to a cross-section of people similar to your jury. We work with many of the top jury consultants in the country during that process.
And do you do that or something equivalent in bench trials?
Sometimes, in a certain way, we might bring in one or more retired judges to have a look at our themes and get their thoughts, similar to how we were having a mock jury to assess the themes that we've come up with. It's sort of like having a mock judge to assess the themes that we think will resonate.
Got it. And what about graphics? They seem to be used extensively at trials and hearings.
Yeah, good graphics are essential. Most of the graphics that you see in courtrooms are, frankly, not all that good. But we work with consultants. We put a great deal of thought into the graphics that we use. There are studies showing that 85% of the communication is nonverbal. And, you know, we live in a smartphone Twitter world. People's brains are trained to receive and process information and form beliefs quickly and through displays of information, not just through the spoken word. So we account for that, and we make it central to our presentations, whether it's to a judge or to a jury.
And like Steve mentioned, graphics are something that most lawyers really do get wrong. They use too many graphics. That's the focus of the whole presentation. Each graphic is jammed with way too much information. They don't use color correctly. It's usually death by PowerPoint.
Death by PowerPoint, something unfortunately we can probably all sympathize with. How important would you say subject matter expertise is?
So by the time you're actually getting to try the case, advocacy skills are far more important than subject matter expertise. The legal issues have already been fleshed out in all of the proceedings leading up to the trial. We do usually have a subject matter expert as part of the trial team, but the lawyer's most important job now is to be able to persuasively present the important evidence within the framework of the applicable law, and it's really advocacy skills that are the most important by the time you get to trial.
We could always find the subject matter support that if we need it and we don't have it.
Got it. And speaking of advocacy skills, are there aspects of a trial that lawyers without a lot of courtroom experience tend to struggle the most with?
I would say that cross-examination is probably the most difficult skill to develop. Preparation is critical, but an effective cross-examiner must respond and adjust in the moment. It takes a lot of experience with inevitable failures along the way to be able to excel at it. I certainly have experienced failures in the courtroom in the course of my career, and I know Sarah and every experienced trial lawyer has, but cross-examination really requires that in the courtroom, in the exchange, doing it. And people think that sometimes like success as a prosecutor equates to success as a private lawyer, as a private trial lawyer, and it helps, but prosecutors are often not required to cross-examine many witnesses. So that's not necessarily true. I'd say another common struggle is seeing the forest for the trees. People become so immersed in facts developed over the years, and they won't focus on the few facts that really matter. Often it's a lack of confidence, or sometimes people have that cover your backside mentality where they think two documents can prove a point, but let's introduce 15 so we won't be criticized. No one can criticize us for putting in more evidence. Well, sometimes putting in more evidence isn't what's called for. Sometimes putting in more evidence confuses and bores the trier of fact, whether it's a judge or a jury. So you've got to be able to really think that through and have confidence that what you're doing is presenting the most persuasive story that you can. Persuasion really is about striking that empathetic chord with your audience, whoever that is, whether it's a judge or jury, and telling really a simple story that has the equities as well as the facts on your side. Whether it's a judge or jury, people want to do the right thing and what they perceive to be the right thing. And you've got to be able to factor that in and not just present something that's a mechanical recitation of facts and documents and testimony that isn't really striking an empathetic chord.
And what about working with witnesses?
So many litigators are experienced in preparing witnesses for depositions, but depositions, at least those taken in the discovery process and that are for the purpose, not for the purpose of presenting trial testimony, so for the purpose of discovery, that's really quite different from trial testimony. The trial witness needs to tell part of the story of the case. And different communication skills are required for that witness than in the deposition. An experienced courtroom advocate shapes the witness preparation to account for that storytelling skill need. And also, there's a tendency among less experienced lawyers to want to tell the whole story with every witness at the trial, and they fail to recognize that each witness has a specific role and that all of those witnesses come together. A well-presented case comes together like a mosaic at trial, with the different pieces, the different witnesses fitting together to form and reveal the big picture.
Interesting. And finally, other than the obvious benefit of courtroom expertise, are there advantages to using a litigation specialist firm like yours to try a major case?
Well, certainly when we're hired, it sends a message to the other side that the client is ratcheting things up and they're getting ready to do battle all the way to the Supreme Court, if necessary. And that can be a great factor in reaching a favorable settlement. I mean, sometimes we don't have to fire the shot, don't have to actually enter the courtroom, but our appearance can have that positive effect. Additionally, you know, there's an advantage in the fact that we're independent. A large percentage of our clients come to us to deal with a specific serious matter, and we don't have a corporate practice. So we lack the institutional ties that sometimes consciously or unconsciously can influence advice that a law firm gives and the strategy it may develop. Our advice about whether to proceed to trial or to settle within a given range is based upon our studied view of the case, our analysis of the facts that have been presented to us and looking at the law, and then the client's goals as they've described them to us. So I think that's a distinct advantage. It's not to say that if you're at a larger firm, you couldn't do a job, you know, great job trying a case, but I think that the independence that we provide is of great value to the client as well.
Showcase your firm across a wide range of areas of law with Chambers Expert Focus. Share unique insights and the critical detail behind key market trends to our audience of legal professionals in written, video, or podcast form. To learn more about Chambers Expert Focus and your chance to distinguish yourselves as experts in a highly competitive market, please email katie.barrington@chambers.com or visit chambers.com/expert-focus. Thank you for listening to the Chambers Expert Focus podcast. Find more podcasts, videos, and articles on this topic and many more by visiting chambers.com/expert-focus.